Hi again, everyone. Good morning. So the last telecom company we are hosting here at the conference is not the least. In fact, it's the largest in the country. So we are happy to have a chat this morning with Glen LeBlanc, CFO of BCE. Glen, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Jerome.
So let's dive right into it. First subject related to the Shaw Rogers proposed transaction. What could be the impact of the proposed transaction on your operations in Ontario, but maybe more specifically in Western provinces? And do you anticipate an impact on the ongoing wireless review at the CRTC?
Well, thank you for the question, Jerome. Obviously, a large transaction pending, but for us, it's business as usual. We have the right assets. We believe we have the right strategy. And more importantly than anything, we have a proven track record of execution against anyone. When you think about it in the West, it's really a swapping of one cable name for another. So it's not going to change the way we compete, nor does it significantly change the competitive dynamics at all when you consider cable overlap. As I said, it's just really a swapping out in the West. As far as the East goes, Freedom was doing an admirable job of growing their wireless subscriber base, and that will over time, when the transaction is complete, we'll see how that plays out and whether that asset remains with Rogers or whether there'll be regulatory remedies required. But it's not going to change the way we compete. As I said, regardless of who the competitor is, we believe in our strategy, we believe in our asset mix, and we believe more importantly in our execution. So it's business as usual. I'm not going to comment on the CRTC or the regulatory hurdles that have to overcome. It's their transaction, and I'm sure Shaw and Rogers will be working through that themselves.
Yeah, great. I understand that. Great. Thanks for the color on the impact on the dynamics. And now moving on to wireline. You announced with your latest results a significant acceleration in your CapEx plans. Is this mostly a pull forward of your future CapEx, or are your expectations for future CapEx higher in general? And maybe also, around when is the building phase expected to be maturing, and what could be the impact on the deceleration of CapEx eventually?
Well, let's go back to what we said in February when we made the announcement of the acceleration. There's a few key points that we discussed. First of all, as we build fiber, we know anywhere we build fiber, we take a significant, or we experience a significant improvement in subscriber take. Anywhere we have fiber, we take greater than 50% of the broadband net new adds, and a significant increase in revenue growth in our markets. So, if you look at what's happened with annual internet revenue growth, it's tripled since 2010 and has been in the double digits in the two most recent quarters. So the strategy is working. There's no question about that where we have fiber, we have network superiority, and in turn, that allows us to take cable share. When we looked at our business plan and our plans for calendar 21 and 22, we found ourselves with the proceeds from the divestiture of the data center and felt there was no better way to deploy that capital than to more aggressively build fiber. And as you said in your opening remarks, it's really just a pull forward. This isn't a new investment of capital. This isn't something we never had on the radar screen. This isn't something we weren't envisioning spending. This is just building fiber faster. Look, if I could snap my fingers and wake up in the morning and have our entire network completed with fiber, it would be a great day, and I'd do that. Naturally, that's not possible, and it takes us time to construct. But coming out at the end of 2022, we believe we'll have 70% of our network future-proofed with fiber, and that's critically important to the ability for us to compete and take share. So this is an extremely exciting investment, and we're only in the early days, but I would tell you that we're very pleased with how it's paying off so far. So it's about building fiber faster. It's about building our or wireless to the home product faster, and ensuring that those areas where frankly, the older networks we have, whether it's DSL or fiber to the node, are no longer going to meet the future needs of the customer and their bandwidth demands. If we can continue to overbuild that plant and that network with future-proof technology that I alluded to earlier, we're going to take share. So this is an exciting time for us. We have the capital, we have the balance sheet, and I think just continue to drive forward. Ultimately, as we continue to take share and build our networks, we will improve the free cash flow of the company, which supports our dividend growth model. I mentioned 70%. You asked the question, you know, when do we see it maturing? Obviously, in post 22 completion of that final 30% will be critical. But there comes a point when you look in the horizon now that it's no longer a pipe dream to see the end of what has become over $1 billion a year of annual fiber construction. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel where we see rebuilding a 140-year-old copper plant coming to an end, and it's pretty exciting to think about what the cash flow opportunities of that when complete.
Yeah, totally. And still in wireline, you provided a lot of granularity on the impact of the pandemic on wireless, but maybe if we talk a bit about wireline here, how has the health of business clients evolved in the last few months, and what is the expected impact of the reopening on these clients?
Well, as you mentioned, we talked at length on our call about the impacts of the impacts of the pandemic, and the obvious one, I'll just touch on wireless for a moment before I move on to your specific question on wireline. But the obvious impact to our business and our industry the most is the fact that there's no domestic or international travel occurring. So roaming revenue that we earn in wireless is depressed and will be for the foreseeable future until we see borders open and Canadians feel safe to move abroad. Our wireline business, though, frankly, has been very resilient, and we're extraordinarily pleased with our performance of our wireline business. If you look at our wireline business more specifically, residential performed extremely well. And I don't think it's a surprise to anyone, excuse me, that during a time when Canadians were forced to work and shelter at home, the importance of a quality connection became critical. This is how we connected to the outside world. This is how we did our jobs while working from home. And I think the residential products, particularly broadband, became absolutely paramount and critical for Canadians. And the fact that we have fiber in so much of our footprint and a superior network offering has really served us well. Matter of fact, even products like home phone became more important than they had historically as people were working from home and felt the need to have that wired connection. On the business side, a little bit more challenging on the small business side because so many businesses were closed. With the pandemic shutting down many of our major cities, whether it be a small businesses from restaurants to local shops, were forced to close, and it's had a fairly significant impact on our small business side of it. But with vaccination starting to ramp up, you know, we're pretty confident that the second half of the year we'll start to see recovery in our small business. On the large business side, it was a little bit of business as usual on the connectivity side, but not so much on other services. As you can appreciate, the investments that enterprise customers were making in digitization and automation were important for them now more than ever during the pandemic, but there certainly was a potential shift of where they were going to make those investments while delaying potentially some other IT projects investments they had with us. All in all, when you look at the state of our wireline business and the performance through this pandemic, I couldn't be more pleased with how we've performed. And like all of us, excited to see us coming out of this in the second half of the year. And we think there's going to be a pent-up demand in for our services as we get back to normal. So excited about the future.
Great, good to hear that. And now on the bundling of services between wireless and wireline, we've seen BC offer wireless and wireline bundling discounts recently, and we hadn't seen much of that previously. Can we expect more of this, and how is BC positioned to potentially benefit from that type of offer?
Yeah, I think you can expect more of this from us. This is a strategic shift for us. It's traditionally we've been a big acquisitions shop, so we didn't have to put as much focus on bundling. But COVID is one of the main reasons we began to offer the wireless internet bundles in a more deliberate way. It allows us to hunt customers on both services that are a natural fit, especially in a converged fiber 5G world. The competitive environment has also shifted towards these kind of offerings. We have had fewer combined wireless internet subscribers than our peers historically, so we have a tremendous opportunity here in front of us, and there's undeniable benefits to cross-selling internet and wireless, as you can appreciate. Most importantly, customer churn is lower and lifetime value is greater, so this is a big opportunity for us, one that we intend to continue to explore and push forward on, and we think from where we're starting, this is a big opportunity.
Great, and you touched a bit on network convergence in your answer between wireless and wireline. Can you describe a bit the concept and the timeline for investors on the line, and what are the opportunities or risks for BC with this trend going forward, given the company's very large wireline footprint?
Well, from a timing perspective, 2021 will be a slow ramp. The growth opportunities are really going to start to come in 22 and beyond. Look, network convergence is about combining fiber with 5G, fixed wireless, and mobile access. It's about integrating those three things and developing offerings for the enterprise segment that leverage that. You know, think about 5G and think about where we're going with 5G and the fact that the cells that we're deploying are going to need a connection to fiber. And we have the largest fiber footprint, fiber network in the country. So as we continue to roll out fiber, we get a natural benefit that our fiber is there to connect to our towers and connect to our small cells, which allows us to offer 5G. And you know, we're over 90% of our cells have fiber connectivity, and that is absolutely critical to deploy 5G. So I think for us, when we look at what the last decade has been of rolling out fiber, we often spoke about that as a wireline network investment, when frankly it was building the foundation for a wireless network network as well. You know, that's where convergence truly comes in, and others in the industry are significantly behind us not having fiber. Our largest competitors in wireline, they're going to have to start doing fiber overbuilds in order to be able to bring the speeds to the 5G, whether that be fixed or mobile, that we have. So, you know, pretty exciting to think about what we have in front of us and how networks are converging. And the fact that we have the largest fibered wireline footprint is truly going to be a competitive advantage in this converged world.
Yeah, an increasingly important topic for sure. And now, if I go back to your strategy on wireless, you mentioned a significant reduction in handset subsidies in the latest quarter that was reported. How confident are you that most of this decline in handset subsidies is a lasting structural change and not related to the quieter market during COVID?
Well, even with the newest iPhone model in the market during Q4, device subsidies were kept largely, I would say, in check and have carried over into 2021. I guess we could say that this is partly attributable to COVID restrictions, which affected store traffic and transaction volumes, but we still think it's a positive development in the industry. So, you know, we're also seeing benefits from EIP plans and in our product margins, which is positive and improving year over year. Our focus on higher value smartphone devices rather than tablets has also helped in this regard. So the early state signs in 2021 are positive. That's not to say that there won't be periods of time with promotional intensity accelerate. So, you know, as you know all too well, it will ebb and flow. In those moments in time, we have to accept that because we operate in a very competitive marketplace. So we're going to be competitive, continue to be competitive, as long as the value of the promotional incentives and per unit handset discounts are lower year over year, then it's manageable and accretive to financial results. So, you know, this isn't going to be a linear path to better discipline in this area, but I absolutely believe that this is the right place for the industry to go. It gives the EIP and installment plans give consumers full flexibility and ability to choose the handset and the device and the packaging that meets their needs. And for us in the industry, with handsets getting the high end handsets getting so expensive, it's important that we be careful, as you know all too well. It seems like no matter what the price of the handset, we find our way to a zero on it at some point during the calendar year. So when you're getting into $1,200 and $1,400 and $1,500 handsets, we have to be careful on subsidy to manage margins and profit for the future. So I think we're going to find a good balance here of meeting the consumer's needs while protecting margins and being a bit more responsible on subsidies.
Yeah, absolutely. And now turning to the guidance you unveiled with your latest results, that was interesting to see. You had decent visibility on your results. You talk about a slight expected improvement in roaming at the end of the year, but can you maybe provide more color on what is assumed behind the 2021 guidance in terms of the maybe economy reopening, borders opening to travel on immigration, and return to office timeline?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to give great specificity on what went into providing our guidance, but what I will tell you is that I remain very confident that the guidance that I provided to you earlier in the year is indicative of how we believe we will perform, and early indications are that we're performing very well in that regard. 2021 is a reset year. It's a transition year, and everyone knows that all too well. We find ourselves, as I'm sure every Canadian, excited to see the country and the globe healing from this pandemic, and as excited as we get one day, we have setbacks as we see cases increase and therefore shutdowns reoccur throughout the country. And I think this is going to be something where, you know, where it's a hurry up and wait. We feel like we take a few steps forward and then one step back. From the business perspective, though, obviously we think roaming will improve in the second half of the year, albeit our forecasts and the guidance we've provided to you in no way expects roaming to return to pre-pandemic levels in this calendar year. From a media perspective, excited to think about fans being back in the building as we open the next season in the fall. For sports, we're starting to see advertising come back. So I'm optimistic about our media business and the recovery we're going to see there. You know, you think about local advertising for local businesses as they start to ramp up and restaurants, shops start to open, let's hope this summer and into the fall, they will be anxious to begin advertising both on television and radio and out-of-home billboards to try to remind their customers that they're back in business and they're here for them. When we start to see travel and people moving about, you'll see hotel and airline advertising increase. So feel good about our media business pick up in the second half of the year. And I mentioned in all my previous comments that our wireline business has just been it's just been so impressive how resilient it's performed. And with the exception of the small business shutdowns, delighted, and I think that's going to come back. So all that to say, I do not have a crystal ball to predict when this pandemic ends, when we come out of this, when our governments open borders, but I remain very bullish and confident that the guidance that we've provided to you in February is very realistic, and look forward to delivering on what our shareholders expect of us.
Great. That's good to hear. Now, on the regulatory front, a lot of important files in front of the regulators right now. When do you expect a decision on the wireless review from the CRTC? And also, do you have an expectation for a timeline of the decision, and then maybe for the setting of the rates, if ever MVNOs are mandated?
Well, you know as well as I do, I do not know when the decision is coming out. Something we're not privy to, but perhaps the pending acquisition of Shaw by Rogers delays that even further. I truly do not know. Your guess is as good as mine. In terms of the timeline, if the CRTC were to decide to implement some form of MVNO structure, that would only be the first step in a long process. Now, we remain hopeful and confident that the CRTC will look to facilities-based providers and away from MVNO, and I sit here today believing that will be the case, but as far as implementation timeline, it's not in our hands and very difficult for us to comment on. So what we do now is continue to operate and drive our business in the best way possible. The investments we're making now will serve Canadians well. We're investing in critical infrastructure to connect all Canadians to broadband. We're investing in 5G networks and ensuring that we have great coverage in this country to continue to be global leaders in 5G. So what we hope and what we've communicated over and over again to government is, let's ensure that policies put in place and decisions that are made don't jeopardize something that we have that's pretty special here in Canada. We have globally renowned networks, and never more than during this pandemic has that shown its true colors, that we are, you know, we're able to connect Canadians, and we have more work to do to get 100% of Canadians connected to next generation broadband, but we're making great progress. Let's not slow that. And as far as wireless goes, our wireless networks are amongst the best in the world. And when you look at what the industry is investing in Canada and 5G and an upcoming 3.5 spectrum auction, I'm sure will result in significant proceeds. It would be a shame to see all of that investment that Canada needs now more than ever slowed because of policies that discourage investment. So remain hopeful. Great lines of communication is what's important here, is dialogue with our governments and ensuring Canadians know what we're trying to accomplish. And I remain hopeful. I remain optimistic.
Great. And we're running very short on time, but I'll squeeze one last in. We've seen very interesting announcement of the expected carbon neutrality of BCE for 2025. Can you talk a bit about the ESG positioning of the company and the industry?
Yeah, there has been an increased investor focus on ESG practices for a number of years now, but since COVID, this trend has only accelerated. Look, Bell has been a pioneer in ESG with a strong record of environmental leadership that we're continuing to build on, and a commitment to the highest ESG standards. Given who we are in the industry we operate in and our goal of advancing how Canadians connect with each other and the world, there's no reason for us not to take a leadership role in the ESG space. We have been recognized for our ESG disclosure, which is best in class. But it's not only about disclosure. You can only be as good at disclosure if you're actually delivering. And we are delivering on that. And I think if you look at our 2020 achievements and our 2020 ESG targets, you'll see that Bell Canada is absolutely committed to this. We know it's an important area, and we're putting particular emphasis on it.
Great. I think that will be very helpful for many investors. Glenn, thanks for your time and your insights, and I wish you a nice day.
Thank you, Jerome, and thank you for those joining in. Have a great day.